Welcome to Career Tools. This week, how to work when you can't work, part two. The questions this cast answers are, how do I do my work when I'm suffering from a physical or mental illness? How do I continue to be productive when I'm suffering? And how do I communicate with others when I'm struggling to work?
Join us at the M Conference and build your network. We'll provide you with connection information for the other attendees as well as our speakers. We encourage networking and have planned multiple networking events so all our attendees and speakers can connect. The M Conference, October 27th and 28th, more than just a conference.
We covered when to work, when not to work, and what your work should be, your minimum viable product, last week. And this week we're going to pick up with using work to get better. Work is a healing activity in and of itself, because successful activity is helpful for many illnesses. And
sure, accomplishment.
Life, life in general. Anytime you can check things off the list, even if you're not a task-focused person, checking things off makes you feel good.
Well, the other way to think about that is if, you know, and somebody's sitting out there listening, saying, this is crazy, because what if I only have an MVP, but my boss wants a great deal more every day? Okay, well, I go back to the point I made earlier. If all you can do is your MVP, you do that MVP, and that's better than nothing. Mm-hmm. And you could sit home and not do anything when, in fact, you could do something, but that will wear on you. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes getting better is not getting worse, mm-hmm. and not feeling the same you did as yesterday, but now feeling guilty and embarrassed that you didn't do anything, where if you had made an effort, if you had managed your energy, you could have gotten some stuff done, and it would have been one more day on the list that you could say to your boss, over this period of time, I had this many days where I achieved my MVP.
Yeah. At home, I have a thing called work during the ads. I'm watching TV and I can sit down while the TV program's on. And when the ads come on, I have to stand up and put the dishwasher on or stack the dishwasher or put the laundry on or whatever. And you get like three 5-minute jobs done in an hour. And no, it's not very much, but it's more than you would have done otherwise. I would have done otherwise.
Well, I think you and I have talked about, I think it's fairly well-known statistics. Anybody could Google it, that in the average hour of television, oh, there's only 42 minutes of programming.
Yes, exactly.
The other 18, so, which is why I don't watch television.
Yeah, you have to not be watching Netflix. You have to be watching something with ads.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you don't get anything done. But anyway,
nothing.
Work provides structure and stability and demands and successes, and all of that can improve mood and outlook and prognosis. Feeling bad isn't a reason to go home and stay there, because even if you do, you might be feeling bad at home, and the guilt and the shame and everything just adds on to that. You know, you end up feeling worse, and going to work and having to get dressed and having a shower or whatever, and then going to work and having some people say hi to you and seem happy to see you can make you just feel better in of yourself. And when you feel better, you can do more. And work, the expectations of you at work are the same, whether you feel bad or good or neutral, right? You don't have to feel good to be working. So if you change your thought from how do I feel to what do I need to do, and you start doing some of those things where you feel like it or not, whether you feel good about doing it or not, whether you're wholeheartedly like in love with doing your email or not, gets work done, and it could make you feel better in and of itself.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I love that line when I read it. Changing your thoughts from how do I feel, in other words, making it about you, changing it to what do I need to do, making it about others, and don't think of it just as a task. Think of it as you're being part of a team of people who care about you, rely on you, depend upon you, and you're going to be able to step up and do what you need to do for them today, even if it's less than you would on a 100% healthy day. I think too often when people say, how do I feel? They're starting from themselves, and greatness never starts from yourself. It always starts outside of yourself.
Yeah. It's not the way I would have thought of it, but I love the way you think of it. Like, so there is a mental health treatment called behavioral activation, which is part of cognitive behavioral therapy, if you've ever seen that protocol. And basically, it involves using behaviors to influence your emotional state, because if you behave in a certain way, you start to feel a certain way. So anything that gives you a feeling of accomplishment, even answering one email, sets off a positive spiral of feeling better and acting better. One trick I use sometimes when my email looks really overwhelming is I say, okay, you have to answer before you can move on. So I look at the first one, I have to answer it. I can't skip it because it looks hard or difficult, or I don't want to talk to that person. When I do that one, and then I do the next one. And somehow that starts to make you feel better. And then when you, by the time you get to the third one, it's like, what was I worrying about? You know?
Yeah, I'm old. Some of the people who are listening probably are young enough to be my grandkids. I'm over 60 years old. I've had a 40-year career. And I have been telling people for years, and only maybe in the last 10 or 15 years has there been science and, you know, important people backing me up. But psychologists, psychiatrists, everyone who is knowledgeable about the human brain and its interaction with our bodies and with our professional lives and personal lives has been saying for years, you can behave your way into feeling anything. And unfortunately, in fact, some things that happen to people, they behave their way into feeling miserable.
Yes.
Because doing things that are harmful to your soul and to your spirit will make you miserable in the long run. You're not an antiseptic, purely organic creature. And people say, well, I feel this way, so I can't behave. And the doctors who do CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and others say, no, no, no. If you want to change how you feel, if you don't want to make life only about you how you feel, which is a mistake, if that's all you want to do is how I feel is what I can do and not do, if you want to change that, all you have to do is behave differently, and you will begin to feel differently. And there's science on this. It's not just good feelings. It's not a song on the radio that cheers you up. What's funny about songs on the radio that cheer people up, science will tell you that you decided to get cheered up. Exactly. It's not the song. You decided. And it's your choice.
And work also gives you social interaction. Humans are social beings, and being alone too much is bad for all of us. So seeing and talking to the people you work with can lift your spirits. And seeing your colleagues, even if it's only on Zoom, forces you to shower and get dressed and brush your hair. And those activities can seem like a bridge too far without a real reason to do them. But they usually make us feel better when we've done them. And so having a reason to do them makes you do them, makes you feel better, and therefore, you know, starts a positive spiral.
The part about having to shower, you know, I got a shower for my colleagues. Yeah, you set an MVP or you set a behavioral goal, and then you realize there's some stuff I have to do, but I'm going to do it because I want to. I said I would, and I'm going to do it. And it'll be hard. I'll probably be tired or run down or achy afterwards, but I'll still do it. Think about it from the other side. Think about it as you're 100% healthy and you have a colleague that is not able to work. They're chronically ill. Would you want them thinking, I don't feel good today, so I'm not going to do anything? Or thinking, no, I need to be on a Zoom call for my colleagues. I know I can't do much, but if you know, for me, you know, showering, getting dressed, looking nice, showing respect for other people, not sitting here in my sweats and looking miserable on purpose, but really making an effort, as long as it's achievable through your minimum viable product or the goal you set for that day, that's what you would want. Do you want them to just say, nah? Or do you want to say, no, I'm going to try today. I'm going to do my best. That's what you'd want. So when you actually do that, when you're the one that's chronically ill, you'll be strengthening or at least maintaining your relationships with your colleagues, and relationships matter.
And even if you're not feeling very smart that day, you can definitely be on a Zoom call and someone else has an idea and you can say, that's a really good idea. Like, you don't even have, you know, and you're contributing, and it makes you feel better to support other people. So,
yeah.
And you can use work to make sure that you use other self-care measures that help you stay well. One of the benefits of work is the structure, because after a 2-hour meeting, it's perfectly acceptable to take a 15-minute break, because even healthy people do that. Take a lunch break and eat. And often eating is a drain if you don't feel well. But without the nourishment of eating, your body doesn't get better. So when everybody else is eating, eat. And if you don't care, just choose whatever the person in front of you chose. Because if you don't care, it doesn't matter. Just eat it. Work also gives you a bounded time of effort. So when you're working, you're spending energy. But when you're not at work, you can conserve energy. So, you know, if you work until five and then for the rest of the night, all you do is watch TV, that's okay. There's work time and not work time, and not work time you rest, and work time you give energy. Because if you're at home all day, it's really hard to work out, you know, have I used the energy I have, or have I just said to myself, I can't do any of it, and I've just sat here on the sofa all day. Whereas, you know, when you have to go to work, it's like, okay, I can do this till five. I just have to do this till five, and then I can sit on the sofa. And often you find that you can do it until five, and maybe you can do it till 5:15, and then you can spend those 15 minutes doing something else.
I will say this, the whole watching TV thing you mentioned, in the show notes it says you could sleep, or you could read, or you could watch TV. I will say that the doctors have said this to me. I've had several people who have worked for me over the years with chronic illnesses, and I've talked to people about it to understand it and so on. And they said, your last choice should be watching TV, especially if you're chronically ill and you lay in bed until midnight watching TV and thinking, well, I'm laying in bed, so I'm resting. No, sleep has specific restorative powers. TV makes you dumb. It does everything for you. It's written in a way to make you want to do more of it. And the colors and the lights and the sounds, we all know this because everybody's addicted to their cell phones now. Some of us are old enough to have had a full career before cell phones came along. But reading would come second after sleep. If you don't need to sleep, then read. Mm-hmm. And if you can't read because it's too much of a mental effort, okay, TV's fine. But TV is not fine until midnight. You staying up, you know, not wanting to sleep because you don't get a full restful sleep or anything, watching TV is a lot less restful than attempting to sleep and sleeping. And your body needs sleep and more sleep when you're chronically ill.
So one more thought here. Use the first law of motion. So the first law of motion is a body at rest will remain at rest, and a body in motion will remain in motion. In other words, like if you kick a ball, it's moving, it keeps moving. If you don't kick it, it stays where it is. And if you come home feeling exhausted, you can use the motion that you're in to do one more home thing before you collapse. It's much easier to do, put the laundry on before you sit on the sofa than to sit on the sofa and think, I'm just going to sit here for 15 minutes and then I'll do the laundry. You'll sit there for the rest of the night when you're tired. It just doesn't happen. So just, and if you get one task done every night when you come home from work, your house doesn't start to overwhelm you, and that makes the rest of your life easier.
Yeah, and your point about do chores during commercials, there have been numerous studies shown of people walking through a cluttered house. And it absolutely affects your sang-froid, your well-being, your mental health. So as you walk through your house, don't walk through it. And if you're walking, you can pick something up. Mm-hmm. And if you do it, if you clean as you go, as Marie Kondo might say, you'll discover that in a day or two, your house will be clean. And there will be a different feeling when you walk through your house. And that will cause you to want to keep your house clean, which will stay with you. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you just keep walking by and saying, look, I can't do anything about that. You're walking, you're going into the kitchen to eat some soup or something. You could stop, you could do that thing, and it'll take a minute and you'll be a little tired. But then in a few days, your house will be clean and it won't be bugging you every single time you go from room to room.
Yeah, a lot of things seem like one big, huge thing. And if you can break them down into tiny little things, it's amazing how quickly they get done.
Oh, you got, then I got to say the corniest saying of all time, which I happen to love as being true. By the mile, it's a trial. By the yard, it's hard. And by the inch, it's a cinch.
Exactly.
It's so good. It's so bad. It's glurgy. It's so bad.
Portland, Oregon, we missed you. We'll be back very soon, October 12th and 13th, with our Effective Manager and Effective Communicator conferences. We're hosted at the lovely Mark Spencer Hotel, right downtown, and we'd love to see your smiling faces in the audience. Join us by registering today at manager-tools.com/training.
Let's talk about the spoons now.
Okay, so this is about managing total effort. So that if you think about the total effort it takes to get through a day instead of managing work and home separately. The effort that you expend and the energy that you have all comes from one place. So it's a limited resource. So we want to allocate it appropriately. Instead of thinking of those two things separately, think of all of the effort that you have during the day. So one way of describing this effort is spoon theory, which comes from a story by Christine Mizarandino. Yes, which has been adopted by lots of people who have chronic illnesses as an easy way of explaining how they feel to others. So she was talking to a friend, they were in a cafe, and Christine has lupus, which is an autoimmune disease. And they were in a cafe and her friend was saying, what's it like to have lupus? And so she grabs a handful of spoons because they're in a cafe. And she explains to her friend that healthy people have an unlimited supply of spoons. And each spoon is a unit of mental or physical energy. But people with chronic illnesses have a finite number of spoons. And the number of spoons they have on any given day is affected by what they've been, by their sleep, by their illness, by their what they've been eating, by their medication, by all sorts of things. And their spoons have to last all day and do all the tasks they need to. And so they start with a rationed number. They know how many they have. And so each activity costs a spoon or more. So showering is a spoon and getting dressed is a spoon and getting to work might be three spoons. And if you start the day with 12 spoons, you now only have seven to ration out for the rest of the day. And it takes three spoons to get home from work as well. So now you've only got four. And sometimes you can use tomorrow's spoons, but that means you have fewer tomorrow. And in the show notes, we've put the link to the whole story. Christine explains it very well. And it's a visual that's been adopted by lots of people because it explains that feeling very well of having a limited amount and having to ration it out, you know, in a way that, you know, healthy people don't have to do. So even if you've never heard of this, it probably makes sense to you.
Yeah. And think about this. Work might not be as important to you as your home life. And we hope it isn't. But it does pay the bills. So it is a necessary evil if it's not as important as your home life. And not having a job will quickly become a significant problem. Even with governmental assistance, you have probably learned to live above government assistance means that will create pain and suffering. And for many people, what I've talked to, and I did job counseling for people for who were unemployed, and it always came up that they were embarrassed. And unfortunately, that embarrassment led to lack of self-confidence, which led to lack of willingness to apply for jobs and so on. And I was known as the guy that I was called the home run guy because I said, go to the interview, make them tell you no, you know, and well, what do you got to lose? And people would come back and say, Mark, they gave me the job.
Right?
I'm like, yeah, I kind of knew that you were good enough, but you were sitting here complaining all the time. I figured we'll just get you off your butt and go do something. But you need a job. Mm-hmm. And not just for the money, but also for the chance to serve other people and to achieve, which are important inputs into your self-worth. But if work doesn't come first, you still need to take care of this and you've got to devote some of your energy to do it. And as Wendy's analogy suggests, maybe you can't make more spoons, but you can choose to spend your time wisely relative to your priorities.
Yeah. And lots, fortunately, there are lots of examples of the best ways to use limited resources, spoons or money or time or, you know, all sorts of places where you can borrow thoughts about how to use limited resources. So, for example, you can reduce energy that's spent on activities that don't add value, which companies do all the time because, you know, they have limited resources. So, for example, you can use paper plates and plastic silverware because that saves washing dishes energy or stacking the dishwasher energy. You can use services for cleaning or grocery shopping or yard work to save energy, which is one reason why giving more spoons to work is helpful, because then you get a salary increase because you're doing more work and that helps pay for services at home, right? You can reduce outside commitments like being on the PTA or other community groups. Like, don't do those things while you don't feel great.
And I can hear somebody saying, but these are, you know, I want to do these things. Yeah, sorry. You're chronically ill. You can't do everything you want to do. And in some ways, your life shrinks back to your family, to home life, and to work, because you need to be competent, minimally viable competent at work. And if you're complaining that you're too tired to work at work, and you're spending time on the PTA or some other community groups, you're making a bad choice for your long-term life.
Don't buy clothes that need ironing or dry cleaning or, you know, special washing. Only buy clothes that just go in the washing machine. Encourage other people in your family to do the work that they're supposed to, you know, if you're part of a family, then we all contribute to the whole. So people in your family should be doing their fair share of the work. Another thing that we use often in companies to use limited resources is automation. So you can automate your finances. You can subscribe to regular deliveries of the things that you need often, like washing up liquid or you know, all of the things that we, all of the things that are in that aisle where the dishwasher tablets are. Amazon will happily bring you them once a month without you having to think about them. There's computer programs like Text Expander and 1Password that minimize the effort you need to do regular actions and minimize the amount of brain power you need to use. So use them. They're there for a reason. You can stay well, which means that you have less downtime, which takes the energy. Take your medication. You know, not everybody is good at taking medication, but take it. Use mobility aids. Use the aids that you need. See your doctor regularly. So those were just some ideas of how to use the limited resources that you have.
Let's talk about prioritizing your workload.
So when you're looking at your workload, reduce the effort you expend on non-core activities. So even on good days, we recommend you start with those things that are on the minimum viable product list that you created previously. That way, if a good day turns into a bad one, you've done the minimum. Like, don't do the thing that is fun or is an add-on or is an extra first. Do the things that keep your job first. It's even more important that for you than for everyone else to follow the normal time management guidance that we all get about prioritizing tasks. Do the important ones first. You might not ever get to the unimportant ones, and that's okay.
Eat the frog. Do the most important thing first and get it off your plate.
And do the things that are important to your boss first, whether or not you agree with them. Just, if that's what's important, do that first.
Yeah, but that applies, let's be honest, that applies even if you're not chronically ill.
Oh yeah, applies to everyone, absolutely.
Yeah, and so when the chronically ill person says, well, it would be easier for me to do this or that. So, by the way, we're not telling you that do what your boss wants rather than what you want is applicable only to you. We tell that to everybody. Mm-hmm. That's a rule of professional life. Your boss's priorities matter. You may disagree with them. If you disagree with them enough, go find another job. But don't make that create a problem between you and your boss because you wanting to do other things somehow supports your feelings about yourself while you're chronically ill, because that's just standard stuff across the board. In the same way that up until the pandemic, everybody went into the office. Mm-hmm. So it's a standard. It's not a burden for you. It's a burden for everyone. And when things are a burden for everyone, we don't think of them as burdens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just things that you should do.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
So some rules for prioritizing your workload. Do the most important things first. Of those, do the things that take most effort first, and break big tasks into small ones and prioritize them independently. So look at the small task and balance that against all the other things that you have to do. And the reasoning for the first two rules we've already covered, those are the minimum viable product and the tasks you need most spoons for. So you do those before your spoons run out. And the last rule helps you with balancing your energy and your workload over days and weeks and months. Because if you break your job into small tasks and manage them one at a time, and, you know, one small thing, you keep adding them. So what is it again? By the mile, it's a trial.
By the mile, it's a trial. By the yard, it's hard. By the inch, it's a cinch. Yeah.
Yeah. And every job is just a series of tasks to be completed. And so if you learn to manage your workload at this level, you can manage the effort required and you can adjust that according to your health.
Yeah. I mean, this is classically reminiscent of David Allen's Getting Things Done, which I love. his philosophy, which he's turned into a huge successful business and many manager tools and career tools and executive tools listeners use GTD, as it is affectionately called, is that any task with two or more steps or which takes more than 2 minutes is, he calls it a project. Right? You have to understand that. If it takes more than 2 minutes, it's got more than two tasks, you might as well think of it differently than just something that takes a minute. Doing your expenses is actually a project. You need to find the receipts, download the credit card statement, match the two, submit them, add comments, submit the whole thing, blah, blah. When you feel great, you might think of that as one task. And you could do it. And it takes 20 minutes and you do it every week and it's no problem and it's routine. But when you don't feel great, think of it as a project, helps you break it down. Okay, I know that's going to take me more than 2 minutes. I know there are more than a couple of tasks. Rather than feeling sorry for myself that I used to be able to see it as one big task because I was fully functioning there before I was now chronically ill, rather than beat yourself up about that, say, okay, this is a project and there are six tasks or whatever. Maybe you do the first thing and you take a break. And then you do the second thing, and then you find the receipts, and then you rest. And it's okay to rest in between, and it takes you longer. It does. You're less productive than other people on this because of your chronic illness, and we understand. And that's how you do it. You break it down into smaller tasks. It allows you to more finely tune your priorities, your efforts, your capabilities, and you can do this with everything you need to do. And Wendy and I routinely have discussions about projects we're developing, big projects that involve all the company and hundreds of thousands of dollars of corporate resources and so on. And we end up breaking it down in individual deliverables. And when it says you have to, you know, she says to me, you have to write a whole new deck. I said, well, okay, we're going to have to break that down because the deck is going to take 5 days and I'll look at 5 days worth of work. I'll look at my calendar and I won't have 5 days.
There's no 5 days.
But maybe a task of 25% of the deck or, you know, the first five slides just to get a nibble on it. You might think, well, nobody does that. Yeah, a lot of people do it. Mm-hmm. Millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people all over the world do this every day. Again, because if I think of the task as taking me 5 days, I will never have 5 days to accomplish it.
And you can break all of your regular tasks into small daily habits too. Is, you know, in a big company, it's entirely possible to, seems to be, because people do it,
yeah,
get away with not answering your email for several days or weeks. But when you do that, you end up with an intimidating email inbox of, you know, 125 emails, and you need even more energy to tackle it. Whereas if you do a little each day, you reduce the amount of energy that's required.
Yeah. And it's okay to do this. You might think, well, other people aren't doing it. Well, other people aren't you, and they aren't dealing with a chronic illness. Look, we're not saying it's okay for you not to do your job or to do it badly or to inconvenience people or whatever. But if doing it your way makes no difference to the end result and doesn't affect other people, do it your way.
Thinking of your work in this way of total effort and how to prioritize your workload is probably some brain stuff you need to do. So we're going to leave it here this week, and we will be back next week with the final part of this series.